This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is the Enterprise Wrap, sharing with you a repeat of our favorite weekly shows, along with a sneak peek of what to listen out for in the coming week on the Enterprise Belt. I'm Off Newting.
And I'm Tasha Fasil. As usual, every week we play a repeat of Careers Unusual, and this week we have Eric Ong, who is a horologist. For those who don't know what a horologist is, or are assuming...
Something to do with horoscope. Yeah,
or something else, something a bit darker. It's actually to do with the study and measurement of time, or the art of making clocks and watches. Oh, I did a quick Google.
I did too.
And it's the exact same line. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's the study and measurement of time. Yeah, so Eric has been in this industry for about 30 years and he also restores old watches and also does appraisals for watches. Now, this appraisal aspect of his career is quite interesting, you know, because people spend hundreds of thousands for luxury watches and these watches are insured. And to get it insured, it has to first be appraised.
By a horologist.
Yes.
Got it.
To get to know the value of the watch, you know.
Okay, and it's timely because Starhill Gallery just had an event recently called A Journey Through Time, which is their annual event where they have a huge fine jewellery and watch expo to feature some of the watches stuff that are in the gallery. I think they bring in some special pieces as well for the audience to have a look.
Yeah, Tan Sri Francis Yeo mentioned during last year's event in a press conference that... In a response to a question about the price of these watches, and he said, these are actually art pieces that you wear on your hands. Maybe in the past, people would love to buy this expensive art piece and hang it in their homes, but...
Why not wear it on your hands?
Yeah, exactly. Why not wear it on your hands? So...
Might get chopped off, but... we won't say that.
Yeah, so our resident Careers Unusual host, Natalie Sia, spoke with Eric and first asked him what a horologist does.
Timepieces itself, we service them. Repair, restoration of timepieces ranging from wristwatches, pocket watches, and even to clocks. That's what we do.
Okay, so you are also a watch restorer and appraiser. What exactly does that mean? What exactly do you do?
Watch restorer and appraiser. Coming to the restorer itself, at times people have a piece that really that bring them back memories, which may be passed down by the heirloom from the great-grandfather. And they would like to get things back to life again. And this is what we do. We restore them. In the past, even if we can't get it, we have to build from scratch.
Oh.
Yes. Then, however, coming to for the appraiser. For the appraiser itself, at times, a piece that is beyond money because, for example, not talk too long back again, it's some vintage watches down on the 50s, 60s to 70s. And they would like to purchase an insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So we need somebody to appraise it, to give them on the prevailing market value, in case, what if. So they can have the money itself insured and can buy back the same piece in the market again. That's what we do.
Right.
For appraiser.
So is there like a standard value that you draw upon, or it's entirely based on your own expertise?
It's not the value, neither is it from either party, not me or whatsoever. It's from the supply and demand, it's from the market.
Right, okay. How difficult is it to make a good timepiece?
For the good timepiece, in terms of good timepiece, every single watch out there, so long they keep good time, that is a good timepiece.
But I've read somewhere that to make a good watch, it's really down to the craftsmanship and the skill, and it sometimes take quite a long while to make a good watch.
Yes, that will become in terms of the, based on the finishings of the product itself, that we talk about complications.
Mm-hmm.
The kind of complications are coming in terms of, well, some of it, they would like to have some skeletons, hand engraving. The finishings in terms of the debarshe, that we talk about, based on the movement itself. They like to hand finish, and some would like to even make of precious metal like gold, yellow gold, pink gold. So that itself, yes, indeed, it takes years. So these are the difference, not in terms of, like, rather, what should I say, they want a piece of art.
Right.
That is an art piece.
Yeah.
And even they go through and they want to set with precious, precious stones, right? Two semi-precious stones, like diamonds, rubies, emeralds, and blue sapphires to enhance they say, wow, it's a wild piece.
So back to your own journey, how did your passion for horology begin?
Well, it starts long way back. It begins with somewhere in my 20s and always been fascinated by the intricacy of the watch movements.
Mm-hmm.
How all these minute parts that come together to become an instrument that tells times. That's awesome, right? It's all minute and all finishes by hands. Yeah, with technology, you can say, well, you can do everything by the machines. Yes, computerized, yes. But end of the day, you still need a watchmaker by hands, for example by hands.
Mm.
And there it goes. That's fascinating, right?
So do you make watches as well?
Yeah, I did. Mm. I came up one.
Was it a difficult journey for you into this area of horology?
Indeed, yes. Okay, yeah, yes and no. Okay, what I mean by yes and no. First and foremost, of course, we come into the most important part. That is passions. It's the largest part that really drive me through the journey. And during which it's not easy, as I said, not easy because it was the market wasn't ready in the Asia market. It's just lack of the, because the public lacks of awareness. It's not easy.
Mm.
Unlike right now, become an accessories. Then was just only a necessity that people buy them.
Yeah.
So it's about timing, the era.
So do you remember the first timepiece you owned?
Well, that was really a good... have you ever heard of the brand name Garuda?
Quite familiar.
That was from Swiss, the brand. Yeah, Garuda. That was back was in the Miami days. Was 18.
Oh.
18 years. And which then was costing you $60 then. But I need to take about 3 months to buy them. I need to save for 3 months.
Oh, so that's why it's so memorable.
Mm. It was really awesome, them Garuda. Whoever, what watch is that? Where does it make from? It's from Swiss.
Did you put in a lot of research and planning to get that watch?
No, when younger day, we don't just only that can afford. We go for price. We can't afford to do it, Richard. And then was not easy. There's no computer. There's no Google.
Yeah, that's right. So for us right now, how important is it choosing the right watch? Is there such a thing as getting a wrong watch?
Getting a right watch or the wrong watch? As I mentioned earlier, number one, they said to get a right watch, the most important thing is a watch that tells time, that really keeps good time, it is a good watch. Then at times people itself, they're talking about, okay, a wrong watch, with the word wrong itself, they have to purchase, for example, a quartz, that's a battery operated.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, I should purchase a mechanical. That was the wrong decision I made, the yes and no. But the most important thing is, do not stretch your budget. Buy within your comfort zone.
Okay.
And always buy something that sings to your heart. Right? And before I come back again, you say, oh, is it the right or the wrong one? The most important thing you need to do right now is do your own due diligence to understand yourself. What your style that you like and what is available in the market. That is important.
Now, Eric, you also emphasized on watches that as long as a watch tells good time,
yep,
it is a good watch. But we always take it for granted that all watches tell good time. So are there actually watches that don't do the job well?
Okay. It don't do a job well itself. It's not say the watch current today, as I mentioned again, with the era today, most of the watch in the market right now, they are very, very precision.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What happened itself when time goes by is based on the wearer itself. So certain watch itself, it allows you to have some, in sports while you're doing, or because you're quite an active guy, it can last you easily about couples of years down the road. So it keeps good times.
Mm.
But at times, for dress watches, for example, they are so thin, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people like to use it for some sports itself. It doesn't allow you to do so. And as time goes by, about 6 months down the road, the wearer will complain, the watch is not keeping time. So he said, this is no good. My dear, I put on the A watch, it was so awesome. But this B watch, it doesn't keep time. And he's going to put a remark also, this brand is no good, or what? So we have to see why, how this thing happens.
Right, okay. Now, the black market for watches has also been growing rapidly. So a lot of pirated watches, a lot of fake watches. How do we learn to identify the real thing?
That's really a good one. Yeah, indeed, you're right. The black market right now is so good.
Mm.
Well, in order to answer that itself, it's very important. They can be looked identical, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The differences is the in-depth. That is all in the details that we need to see. What actually went wrong is only from the inside outside. We must have in-depth experience to tell what went wrong. It's all in the detail. For example, maybe like the, let's say for example, the way the crown was being placed and the pusher, the way it was being placed, is it symmetrically balanced?
Oh.
Right? One. Two, the logo. The logo, is it the right size, the fonts they're using, are they right? And this itself really in them to look really inside out. Other than that, the best way out, engage a professional.
Yeah.
If really make you decide to purchase something that is really big.
Okay. So you are here in Malaysia as one of the speakers at the A Journey Through Time event. What did you talk about?
For the questions we talk about, what we introduce is based on collecting of timepieces for the beginners. That's on Saturday. And on Sunday, we talk about the $1 million watch.
$1 million watch?
Yes.
So
yes.
What's that?
$1 million watch, that means a watch that costs in US dollars more than $1 million. That is really people want to know why is it $1 million watch?
Why is it $1 million watch?
Okay, $1 million watch that comes in itself that people, they like rather some of them, as I mentioned to you, the connoisseurs. These are really the people want to go about it with, which they really appreciate in terms of art, the fine art, the craftsmanship behind it. And also they want to know the history
mm-hmm.
of these brands behind stands. And talking about the finishings that were just now mentioned early on, in terms of the movement, how they finish it, either by hand and the finishing in terms of what? The complications, like for example, start from the day date, that will become the chronograph, then there will be a moon phase, then it comes in with annual calendar, perpetual calendar, and some even they come in to repeater, then tourbillon. Really, these are the complications, but the watch itself is become an instrument.
Now, as we said earlier also, a watch has become an accessory today. So, as we are drawing near to the end of 2015, what are the watch trends for 2016?
For the watch trend for 2016, one thing you can see right now in the market, the gold is back. And vintage too, we can see in 2016, a lot of brands were coming out in vintage. Vintage means they want to do some current to this market, but with a vintage look. So you try to bring back vintage to life. And the sports watches, they are in. And today, as I mentioned to you, it's an accessories, and color stripes is back too. Last but not least, the independent watchmaker is the next big thing.
Oh. So any tips on caring for our own watches?
Yes, this is important thing. As being a watch collector or beginners, the important thing itself, they say you have a watch is a daily beater, every day without fail. Okay, that's in terms of mechanical. Please do a regular maintenance service. And if you're wearing a watch, a quartz, that means in the battery operated,
mm-hmm.
please replace it yearly in terms of the batteries. The lifespan of the battery itself on the Swiss watches itself is about 18 months. And the lifespan of the quartz or the integrated circuit is 20 to 35 years if you maintain it well. So mm-hmm. in order for us to prolong, these are the things we will look out for. And if you want to service the watch itself, they have to check the person whom is doing up the watch, their credential.
Okay, not just any watch shop.
Not just any person. They say he's a watchmaker, he's a watch technician. No, please check on the credential.
Mm.
And a lot of people not realizing that, please, when you have a mechanical watch, when you're home, back home in the office, please avoid the super magnet. like avoiding the household appliances, the computer, etc. It's current today, laptop, computers. Why? Because it's magnetic field, right? So that will affect the timing of the watch.
I see.
And avoid extreme temperatures because movements are very sensitive. Sudden change of temperatures. That's about last but not least. We must take notes on that.
What are some of the key things that one needs to have to become a horologist?
The key thing to have, first, passions.
Passion.
Second, that person wanted to learn, he or she must also be gifted. Lastly, if the person got none of the above, then he or she got to work doubly hard. Very, very, very hard. Still can make it, but the tougher way to come around just to learn.
Thank you so much, Eric. I've been speaking to Eric Ong, a horologist, and you've been listening to Careers Unusual on BFM 89.9.
And that was Natalie Xia speaking with Eric Ong, a horologist. Up next, we'll be sharing with you the top three interviews to look out for this week, along with a repeat of Five for Fortune, which is the second part to five things we can learn from Spectre's Bond.
Ooh. Mm. Yep, so stay tuned. This is the Enterprise Wrap on BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to the Enterprise Wrap. I'm Tasha Fusil.
And I'm Ofnir Ting. If you've just joined us, we're just about to share with you the top interviews to look out for this week, starting with Wednesday's Tech Talk, where we'll have Faisal Arif, founder of BorderPass, on our show.
Right, so this is pretty cool. Like, BorderPass is basically sort of the AutoGate version that we have with our Malaysian passport, but for immigration services. Mm. And I think BorderPass is setting it up in ASEAN, so they're just rolling it out in the ASEAN region for now. But imagine that, you know, you'll be cutting queues, there'll be no queues for immigration or visa checks.
And apparently, according to what I read, your identity can be verified within 10 seconds. Wow, imagine all the queues you can cut.
Using facial recognition, I saw a video online and you just
and
stand there.
And thumbprint as well, right?
They talked about how they want to prioritize hygiene, so you don't actually have to, there's no actual physical contact with the machines that read your identity.
Oh, that's advanced.
That's just like on another level.
I read more online. Basically, you just need to fill in your info and accommodation info locally. That information will be sent securely via an electronic app to the officials of the destination that you're heading to, and that replaces the traditional forms at the airport itself.
Right. The whole idea, I think, is to make traveling as seamless as possible, because Faisal himself is a very avid traveler, and one of the purposes of BorderPass is to make traveling seamless so that you can focus on the destination rather than, you know, the journey, which can sometimes be a bit tedious.
Yeah, nobody likes to wait in a line.
Who likes queuing up, right? So that is going to be happening next Wednesday at 12 o'clock on Tech Talk.
And up next on Thursday's Raise Your Game, we have Paula Rizzo, author of Listful Thinking, on our show.
Yep, so for the list makers out there, you'll be pleased to know that, you know, the greats like Madonna, John Lennon, Ellen DeGeneres, Leonardo da Vinci, and even Thomas Edison were all known for being list makers.
I wouldn't consider myself a list maker, but I have a daily to-do list. Does that count?
I suppose so. So I guess we'd have to tune in to find out what sort of, you know, how you can up your list making game. Because in my mind, that's the only like list I know to do. So the checklist, the to-do list.
Yeah.
So probably, you know, so hopefully she'll have some advice and some tips on how you can elevate your list making game.
I really want to listen to that, because all I do is write down a list and draw a box. And
a nice little box, right?
Yeah, and just tick it when I'm done. But I'm sure there's more to that. Yes. So this happens on Thursday, 11 a.m. on Raise Your Game.
Finally, another one to look out for is Friday's Open for Business, which is going global, where we speak to businesses and entrepreneurs from around the world. Michael O'Keefe, the CEO of Aesop.
I love that brand.
I know. Well, yeah. I think it's a favorite among a lot of avid beauty users, because they're so...
But I'm a guy.
Avid skincare users?
well, to tell you honestly, I'm not really a skincare guy, but... I was actually initially attracted to Aesop by their interior design.
Yes.
And that's a very interesting part of the business structure, actually. The founder of Aesop once mentioned that he didn't want Aesop to be just another soulless chain. So if you realize, every single Aesop has a totally different interior design.
Yeah.
They want to make every store different and has a life of its own kind of thing.
Yeah, and the design of the store is always inspired by its surroundings. So for example, there's an Aesop store in Bangsa, and it's sort of pinkish, and the color was chosen to reflect our Kuih Lapis.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, some behind the scenes information for you there.
the brand is one that doesn't really follow the norms of what a normal beauty care company would do, right?
For sure. They don't do any sort of marketing at all. The only marketing that happens is in-store with like you said, their interior designs, and you know, the store always smells lovely all the time. That's what Aesop becomes known for. And it's not really for, they don't do celebrity endorsements. If you notice, they don't even have products that focus on anti-aging. So they're not all about pulling you down.
So this is happening on Friday, 10 a.m. on Going Global. So don't miss out on that. That's all we have for you this week. But before we leave, here's a repeat of Five for Fortune, where we share with you part two of the five things to learn from Spectre's Bond. Until next time, I'm Off Newting.
And I'm Tasha Fazil.
You've been listening to The Enterprise Wrap. Have a lovely Sunday. BFM 89.9.
Bond. James Bond. What can we learn from the movie Spectre, from observing one of the biggest heroes known in the history of cinema? This is Five for Fortune, bringing you five do's or don'ts to help you navigate the challenging world of business and work. I'm Maya Tan. Welcome to the second part of Things to Learn from Spectre's James Bond. If you missed part one, do look up the podcast on bfm.my. Here are five more things that you can learn from the movie Spectre, from Bond and all the other characters in the film. Oh, and again, a word of caution, there will be spoilers, so listen at your own peril. Number one, never give up and stick to your convictions. Even if the task seems impossible, even when you can only take baby steps, or in Bond's case, you only have a handgun to shoot at the villain's helicopter from a speedboat, believe that you can make a difference. Have confidence in your sharpshooting skills and keep at it. Even baby steps could bring about a successful outcome. In Bond's case, time is a huge factor, but in most cases, you do have time, so trust that even baby steps will get you towards your goal. Number two. Bond is emotionally intelligent. Even when he's being interrogated, even when he's being suspended, he keeps his cool, especially when it counts the most, and that is in front of his bosses.
Mexico City. What were you doing there? I was taking some overdue holiday.
His main modus operandi is to infuriate his bosses by taking things cool, but he always comes through in the end. He's not great when it comes to budgets and equipment, but he does do the job. Now, one important thing to note from this is that we are not James Bond. So take care not to infuriate your bosses, because it could backfire on you. If you do want to go the Bond way and always come back with a great outcome, never mind the methods you use, you have to ensure that you're the best. So that while no one is indispensable, not even Bond or the 00 program in this movie, if you're one of the best, they'd be hesitant to let you go to their competitors. End of the day though, despite great results or performance, attitude, easy communications, an inspiring personality, and likability are important elements. Bond doesn't exactly make it easy to work with him, and even his charms wear off on the money pennies and the Q's and the M's after a while, because they have to endure his cryptic behaviour. Number 3. Watch who you fraternise with. In the workplace, building your connections is important. So often, just as word of mouth is the most powerful form of influence, the opinions of the right people in the workplace could make or break you. Inspector C thinks he's got it made because he's got an alliance with Blofeld. Unfortunately, it was his undoing. And M says it best in this scene.
Not a good feeling being watched, is it?
Don't tell me you're responsible for this.
No, but my quartermaster is, and he's extremely talented.
Well, bravo. But in case you hadn't realised it, you two are out of a job, so you're trespassing.
I'm afraid you've got the wrong end of the stick, Max. We're going to stop this system going online, and then I'm going to bring you in.
On what grounds, exactly?
Poor taste in friends.
Number 4. Even in the most dire of circumstances, stay focused and use any weapon you have, even if it's just a wristwatch.
So, James, I'm going to penetrate to the inside of your head. Now, with this first probe, we'll play with your sight, your hearing, and your balance, just with the subtlest of manipulations.
We'll get on with it, then.
Nothing can be as painful as listening to you talk.
All right. Let's begin.
Bond is down. He's been captured by Blofeld. Blofeld has him in a chair with needles being drilled into different parts of his skull, and they're soon moving into his eyes. Does he start screaming? A little. Does he start to panic? Probably. But does he give up? No. He uses whatever he has in his arsenal, even if it's just a wristwatch, even if he's about to pass out.
Well, if the needle finds the correct spot in the fusiform gyrus, you recognize no one. He dies not knowing who you are.
So, taking this into the business or work context, say for example, all hell is breaking loose at your business, you're under attack, you're in the hot seat, maybe you're losing all your clients, maybe your creditors are coming down on you for payments. Well, in a situation like that, the bad news is you've hit rock bottom. The good news is you've nothing left to lose but to remain focused and to climb back up. Don't panic. Don't get depressed or hysterical. Don't lose focus. Do what you need to do. Buy time, refinance, sell, pivot your business. Just keep your cool and keep your focus. Number 5. Do not be ruled by emotion. I think emotion seems to be a big theme here with Bond. The focus, the undying determination, the confidence and conviction. Bond gives all of himself. Now that's what I call passion. And sure, he feels strongly, especially when it comes to M, the Judi Dench M. But he's never really ruled by emotion, and he never forgets ethical conduct. Sure, Bond keeps damaging public spaces by shooting helicopters. He just about destroyed a good chunk of New Mexico. But when he gets the upper hand and the bad guy is at his mercy with a gun pointed to his head, does Bond pull the trigger?
Finish it.
Had a bullet?
No. He doesn't forget what's ethical and what's right. And you can be sure that the new M, the refines M, takes note of that. It's truly a defining moment. It says a lot about what kind of man Bond is. And that is why, despite the good, the bad, and the ugly, we all, on some level, want to be Bond. James Bond. This is Sam Smith with Writings on the Wall, taken from the original soundtrack of the movie Spectre. This is Five for Fortune. I'm a Bond enthusiast for BFM 89.9.
I've been here before, but always hit the floor. I've spent a lifetime running, and I always get away. But with you I'm feeling something that makes me wanna stay. I'm prepared for this. I never shoot to miss, but I feel like a storm is coming. If I'm gonna make it through, there's no more use in running. This is something I gotta face.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.